Welcome to MGO Radio 4.10. I am here and I am next to not Brian Cook because he's sick. So
yeah, I'm sorry for Brian. What can we say? I felt bad that he wasn't on radio yesterday, and I feel bad he's not here now. So you got the minor leagues. Sorry.
Well, we got Craig Ross here. Mm-hmm. I would not call you the minor leagues. Mm-hmm. I would call you the actually, I don't know what I would call you.
I would call me the minor leagues.
A 3,000-year-old druid is what I actually call you.
So get better, Brian. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't listen to WTKA podcast, which is probably none of you, Craig Ross is a 3,000-year-old druid mm-hmm. who discovered Michigan football, discovered Michigan sports sometime in the 16th century. And has been to every single Michigan sporting event since and remembers every single detail of those events. Is that pretty much correct?
No. Some of it's correct. But I've been, my guess is I've been to about as many Michigan games in one sport or another as anyone. But my memory wanes. I am old.
And I've said this before, put you, if we actually had to make a list of the greatest Michigan fans, like you can't really put that in context or anything, mm-hmm. right? There's no way to say who is the biggest fan.
Yeah.
But if you were actually going to try, you would be the person that I would submit as the biggest Michigan fan.
Well, thanks. That's nice. Don in Ann Arbor, who calls on Thursday, might be.
I'm not talking about intensity. I'm basing this on just hours logged spent on your Michigan fandom. If you build out to Michigan for all the time that you spent on them.
Yeah, that's true. I would have made a lot more money on that than I did my law practice, that's for sure.
Well, so we're gonna continue on as if you're Brian Cook or if I'm Brian Cook and
you're Brian Cook.
You got to be Seth today.
I'll be Seth.
Yeah. So just make some stupid comments whenever I look at you, and I might like make a frightening face. This is a very visual podcast, by the way. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
The one thing that is different from doing radio on WTKA is that you can swear on this. Now I'm not planning on swearing, but it. One of the odd things for me on radio is I go in and every morning I say, okay, I can't swear. No expletives allowed. And so far I haven't blown it, although somebody did. Rich Reddy from the library I was on with one day, and he did blow
the library blows it.
Yeah, from the district library. I can't remember what which of the seven words he said, which you're not allowed to say, but he did say one, and it wasn't caught by Ira, so there you go. But that's sort of a relief not being or having the.
All right. Yeah. Well, we had a family rating for this podcast mm-hmm. on iTunes, but since this last couple of weeks we've been covering Rutgers, I'm pretty sure we're going to lose that because, there's certain things you can and can't do to retain your family rating, and covering Rutgers is one of them, which we're about to do right now.
Rutgers.
Yeah. Is there anything to take away from Piscataway?
Yeah, I'm not sure there's ever been a game that had so little interest. Even in bad seasons as this particular game, I think because we're coming off of such good wins and big games, and then to go and play in New Jersey against a team that no one really thought had much of a chance in the game. But I think the team reflected that some too, because I don't really think we played a particularly great game. I mean, a couple things. One is we didn't pull the ball at all on the offense,
which I was fine with.
I was fine with too, because we've got to keep Shea Patterson healthy.
Right.
On the other hand, that meant the offense all of a sudden became 10-on-11, an ordinary offense or an ordinary old day offense. And it was no longer an 11-on-11 game, which read options allow you to become.
So you don't subscribe to the theory put forth by exactly nobody mm-hmm. until me just now, that Michigan was kind of keeping the pedal off the gas for Rutgers because their intention all along was to mash the score for Penn State. So that James Franklin had to have that as his comparison.
No.
Because we couldn't blow out Penn State enough to double over again. Yeah. Because 42-7, 42-7, and Michigan State was 21-7. So, like, it's a double MSU.
Yeah, all the games were about the same, too, in some ways. I mean, truly, I thought maybe we played best against Michigan State. But because they actually, they wanted to win that game, and they, well, not that Penn State didn't, but that they actually had a real rushing defense.
At times, it seemed like they didn't.
Yeah.
But we're past Penn State.
We're past Penn State.
Offense, you know, this is our segment that we kind of normally talk to Brian about UFR, but I guess we're just kind of going to go over some of the things that he wrote about in UFR for him. And, like, the notes that I had, the biggest thing that I think I took away from this game was True Wilson looks fine as a running back for next year. If he ends up the lead back next year with Chris Evans or steering time or whatever, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, Wilson isn't going to be the sort of back that's a superstar. He isn't going to blow people away. But he always seems to make the right cut. He doesn't seem to blow opportunities. And he's a good pass blocker. I mean, he may be, although Higdon has done a reasonable job this year, I think, as a pass blocker. He's improved. But Wilson's pretty good. I think it'll be a three-way deal next year. I think Evans will get run, obviously. I think Wilson will get some run. And somebody else will.
Christian Turner. Christian Turner. Haskins and
well, Haskins, I think Haskins is probably destined for defense.
Okay.
But I think, Omari Samuels or Wilson or Charbonnet coming in.
The thing about True is that his pass blocking is way above that of everybody else on the roster, at least we've seen. Right. Charbonnet actually kind of looks like a five-star True Wilson. Like, when you watch film, it's like, oh, that's what True Wilson looks like if he was a five-star running back instead of a guy about to go to Air Force.
Right.
But it's the same kind of thing. He makes great cuts. He is very involved in the passing game, a very willing and very good blocker. And that gives you an opportunity, especially if Shea Patterson comes back, to really let the pass offense take off next year.
I have two takeaways, before you get back to yours, we can do them in sequence. One is that down G. I mean, we ran down G, I think, 11 times in this game. Let me check.
We had variants of it, too. They kind of...
Yeah, and...
They switched the roles of the guard and the tight end so that the guard wasn't kicking out. The guard was actually just on a regular pull, and the tight end was kicking out.
Okay. So, I read 11 or 12 down Gs for about 6 yards a carry, 5.8 to 6 yards a carry. And when this first came up earlier in the year when Brian and I were talking on it on the old-fashioned radio, Brian said, look, this isn't sustainable. This is a one-off. And at that point, I said, really? Couldn't you run a couple of pass plays off of this, which they actually did? And isn't there some ways to soup this up to make
we've been asking this question all year. Can you be a down G-based team? And the answer is really no. But one of the things that I thought, and this goes back to another takeaway that I was going to get into, is that they were able to run it so well against Rutgers because Rutgers has a hybrid space player who is really more of just a safety out there, which a lot of teams do. Most teams nowadays are using an outside linebacker who's just a safety. And Michigan is absolutely one of them, right? And that's a reaction to the spread. And you want to have your best players on the field all the time, so that's what people go with, a third safety. And this was the first game that we, I think, really get to see a perfect example of why Michigan's kind of old-school tight end blocking defense is going to be difficult for those teams to manage. Now, you have a guy like Khalik Hudson, it's not going to matter because the way he hits is harder than a linebacker with a big neck roll and a really cool iron name. It would ever do before, right? Like, so he can hit you as hard as Rob Sweat, so it doesn't make a difference. But most teams don't have a guy who is able to run around like a defensive back and hit you like Rob Sweat. Now he's the guy I'm going to use as the example. Or Jake Ryan, too. That kind of outside linebacker is no longer in football, and Michigan can exploit that fact by running tight ends against those guys, bashing them with guards on occasion. And when you do that, you move them and you create more space for your running game.
Well, it's certainly been the case that the down G and their variants this year have been really good for Michigan. And Michigan doesn't run a lot of power and doesn't run it all that
they
well.
They ran some in this game.
They ran a little. Yeah. But, you know, the one thing that Harbaugh did to sort of soup it up the prior week, I think, if I'm getting my, is running out of, a lot of stuff out of pistol. Uh-huh. It was Penn State when they ran all the pistol.
It started against Wisconsin.
But they ran a ton of it, I think, against Penn State, and they ran the same old stuff, only they were running it out of different looks. And I think they ran 14 or 15 pistol formations in the first half, certainly on the drive. All eight plays were out of pistol. But, you know, so they're running a lot of the same stuff, but out of different looks.
Right. Well,
they're
the
running a lot of split
zone
and arcs.
The pistol is part of just running it. It's like running the shotgun. Mm-hmm. And the pistol is really just allows you to tack downhill a little bit mm-hmm. more from a shotgun, but it's the same thing. It allows you to read a guy.
Yeah.
And I think that is, they're using the pistol because they're going to zone read people. They weren't going to do it against Rutgers. They're probably not going to do it much against Indiana. But that's why that's there. And it's really just kind of replacing the fullback, who would normally be the guy standing right there, and normally a guy who'd be blocking the guy that you're optioning. Mm. So it, and that's kind of one of the things that we saw again in this game, is that Ben Mason has kind of fallen out of the offense. Like, he got about 12 snaps, I think. And again, I'm fine with that. It's Rutgers. You have only so many times you can smash a fullback into somebody's face, and Michigan doesn't have a lot of other fullbacks. With apologies to Jared Wengler, whose father's going to be on this podcast
later.
Although
I thought Wengler
has
played pretty well.
He has, you know? Yeah.
So
he has. But like you have so many times you can bash fullbacks into people before the fullbacks start getting some wear and tear. And I think that's why no one has a full-time fullback bashing into somebody every single play. And the way you can do that in modern days is just option that guy. Michigan's not optioning that guy, so I'd like to see maybe some more of the fullbacks against Indiana, who has a similar team. But we'll get to those later.
My other takeaway... from the offense was Patterson having what I thought was a tremendous day.
He did.
Giving the wind in particular. I mean, there was a ball that was on the money to Oliver Martin that hit Martin in the helmet. It was a very good throw.
It hit him in the face.
it was a hard play for Martin because the ball was being blown a bit. I think Martin probably would admit he should have caught it. There was another one that the ball sort of got caught up downfield. I think that was DPJ.
One of Peoples Jones mm-hmm. where you wanted Shea to lead him more because he'd really beaten the guy. And he had all the middle of the field to mm-hmm. play with. And I think that ball, because it was wobbly when it was coming mm-hmm. down, I think that ball floated back because I saw Peoples Jones kind of have to adjust to it after that moment. You know, mm-hmm. you're watching a football, you understand that moment the receiver is making his adjustment once he sees the ball. And his adjustment had to be readjusted on that one. So I think the wind probably wobbled that one back to mm-hmm. the side of the field.
But outside of that, and then there was one pass in the flat I think he blew. I'm not sure he threw a bad pass in the game. I looked at Pro Football Focus, and they graded him as a 94.4,
right.
which is probably about as good, maybe better than any grading of any quarterback this year.
And I think Rutgers, their secondary is like the good part of the team. Mm-hmm. That's like the one thing that Chris Ash is good at is the secondary. Mm-hmm. And he's got some players back there, too. The free safety I thought was good. They've got a pretty good cornerback there. The other cornerback is fine. So they have, I think Michigan for this game was not going out there thinking we need to score as many points as we can. I think they wanted to get Shea passing, and they wanted to, you know, run some of their base stuff without Shea having to hold the ball. Obviously, that can come back in the offense when it's needed. And you saw, because the second another quarterback goes in and the keeper is back in play, Chris Evans runs it all the way because a linebacker actually jumps out of his lane to protect himself against the quarterback keeper. So that is part of the offense. It wasn't yesterday. Once Rutgers kenned that, it was not going to be a great running game, and I thought that was fine. The thing I was much more concerned about was Higdon was just missing cuts, which is an issue that's cropped up maybe once a game before, and this game it was like maybe four of them.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't his best game. But on the other hand, McEwen is coming off of a bad game and I think had a pretty good game this week. And now part of that might have been structural. Brian seemed to think it was structural
it was,
more than anything else.
And I think he decided after the UFR that it was really that hybrid space player of Rutgers that he was just bashing a small guy around, yeah. and that's a lot easier to do. But when McCune makes contact, his guys move. I think some of his targeting issues are still, they still need some work, and that's to be that's understandable too, because he's doing a little bit different things than he did before. Michigan had one play, I thought, where they just ran him, Brian caught this too in UFR, where they had him lined up in the backfield, and if they just make him the inline guy, he would have had an easy shot at a pin and pull. And instead, he had to kind of arc around a guy, and that gave that linebacker time to ruin his block. And then Gentry's blocks are Gentry's. Yeah. But I thought Gentry was a much better receiver in this game than we've seen him for a while. And again, this was decent coverage he was beating. So he had one play where he caught, they actually called a defensive hold because he was wearing a Rutgers safety as a cape.
Yeah. And he
still made the catch. Well, yeah, the safety didn't. I said the safety went for an ent ride because he was there, but he wasn't affecting Gentry's path at all. And you saw him use his entire catching radius in this game. When Patterson is on, that is going to be undefendable. And the other thing that's going to be undefendable while we're at it is just that fade that he threw into the end zone.
So he threw everything pretty much on the money. But the fade is really hard for defensive backs. Yeah. The one other thing was, I think, pass protection. Brian graded out. Did he grade it out as 100%, which I've never seen?
Well, yeah. Rutgers. Right. So anything against the secondary, I will keep. But anything against their linebackers or anything that happened against their defensive line is just, that's Rutgers. So I'm not sure we can really do much with that. And I do want to get into some of the defensive things, too, that we saw. Just because our Rutgers segment does not need to be 40 minutes. Yeah. defense, screens, more screens. I think you saw exactly what happens when a team actually does not game plan around Devin Bush. Devin Bush just murders them.
Yeah, I mean, except for the very first one, which would have gained some yards. I'm not sure it would have been the big gainer.
Right.
Outside of that, every single one of those screens was blown up, I think.
They ran the same play on the next the next play. Like, oh, that almost worked. And I don't think Rutgers was actually trying to throw the ball downfield at all in this game. And you could say win, but I also think that, like, Rutgers knew what the score was.
You could also say Arthur Sitkowski.
Yes. That guy tossing balls into the best secondary in the country was probably...
It was a losing strategy.
So Rutgers knew they were going to lose this game, and they wanted to get out of it with some measure of respect. Yeah. And I think that their game plan played into some of Michigan's strengths and allowed... And so there were a couple busts.
Yeah,
and
the worst one was the 80-yarder, which I think you analyzed.
I spent more than enough time on that thing. Yeah. But I analyzed it because, and I don't think any of it was really stuff that's going to happen. Again, Chase Winovich is not going to be completely out of his lane. It was a little bit of a reaction to Blackshear because Rutgers is so Rutgers that Blackshear's the only thing you have to react to.
Yeah, I mean, Winovich over-pursued and Gill... got out of this gap. And
Gill was a problem in this game. And that was one thing. There are two things that I didn't like about the defense in this one. Is number one, Gill made, I think, four plays like that where he was just overrunning, over-pursuing. Mm-hmm. And when you do that against a zone team, it's going to matter a lot in some of the games coming up that you just can't get out of your lane like that. You have to play more responsibly. And I thought that given how Josh Ross played, and there was actually some pretty... good Ross plays in there besides the obvious one where he just stuck a guy. There was a great play he made. They had a tight end way out in the flat, and he just closed down the space and made the tackle. And that was part of a very good day tackling in space by Michigan, which is a kind of change in the topic a little bit from Gill. But I thought that was a very positive thing, especially given Indiana and given who's after Indiana, that Michigan can tackle in space, and that is going to save them a lot if that can continue against some of the slot-based offenses that they're going to be playing
soon.
Well,
it's going to be especially important against Ohio State because the one good thing Ohio State does in particular is yards after catch by their wide receivers. Those guys can do that.
Yes, and that's going to be a thing because you know, Metellus's health, I'm guessing he's fine. I think that was just a...
That's my guess.
Yeah. But Metellus is going to be very important because last year some of those KJ Hill kind of ran away from him. I'm hoping we'll see him against Indiana just so we can kind of see how he stacks up against their slots. Mm-hmm. Just quickly, because we're getting into Indiana already, Gary had a kind of a very quietly great game.
He had a very good game. I mean, you're not going to get sacks or many
right.
in that sort of game because they're just dumping it on screens or getting rid of the ball fast as they can. So
right. But most of his day was actually taking out multiple guys. There were a couple times even where he covered because he got in so easily that he just kind of ruined the play. And there were a couple bad things that happened with defensive tackles on that single play that didn't matter because Gary had just completely destroyed the edge.
Yep. So PFF graded him highly in this game.
Right.
Also.
So people who are looking at Gary's stats and saying, oh, my God, Rutgers has a guy with more with more TFLs or whatever it is that you want to point to at Gary, you're absolutely wrong. He's been fantastic this year. He did miss some time, but he's still tracking as a first rounder. And I still think this is our last year with
him. Kuiper has him as in the first round, the number 8 pick this week. They have Devin Bush as number 6. I'm sort of sad to say, because my guess is he's gone.
I wish the NFL had not yet discovered small linebackers, because they absolutely have, and Devin Bush is going to fit very well in a smart NFL defensive scheme. Yeah. But yeah, it's nice to have Gary back. The 3-3-5 still doesn't work. They tried it again in this one. And
I miss that. They ran some 3-3-5.
Yeah, and then they... there was that, and there was also, it wasn't a 3-3-5, but Uche got kind of edged on a running play on a third and long one time. So those issues, I just think they don't have the personnel for 3-3-5, and that's why that didn't work. Other than that, the big takeaway, I think, is tackling in space, which is going to be important.
Yeah, no, I agree. Is going forward, that's the deal.
Yep. All right. So, yeah, that kind of leads us to Indiana.
Indiana.
I think we'll do a break and come back and do that.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're gonna win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships. And we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor, downtown.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.10. I'm Seth Fisher. I'm here with Craig Ross today because Brian is sick. And we forgot to mention our sponsors, who we love dearly, so I'm going to bring those guys up right now. Our sponsors today are Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homesure Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus.
Good work.
Have you tried Lantana yet?
I have not, but Brian says it's very good.
Yeah, all right. You have to let me know pick out like four flavors that look interesting.
Okay.
And like serve them at a party.
Okay.
Because it's conversational. People will all come and tell you what their favorite thing is, and like it's so easy. Like if you need something, put out some chips and some Lantana.
Where can I buy it?
Well, you can find it at Bush's. Or Grocer. Did I say Grocer? This is Brian's part to say.
Oh.
Yeah, Bush's, Kroger, Meijer.
Okay.
Check your local grocer. They'll probably have
places.
It. Yeah, just look for the striped libs.
Okay.
Yeah, so Indiana.
You're going to have to carry the weight here, but let me give you the things that confuse me about Indiana.
Okay.
I do this. I've mentioned it all starting in the middle of the season when I feel like I have enough data points. But I do something called net yards per pass attempt as a way of evaluating team strength. And it nailed to a point the Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Penn State games. It was a little off. It was off by 6 or 7 points on the Rutgers game, but you know, by and large, it's been really good at predicting and projecting stuff this year.
Okay.
Well, Michigan on these numbers right now is a plus 4.00 yards per pass attempt. That is, we're 7.54 yards on offense, 3.54, which is the lowest number I've ever seen on defense ever and since I've been doing this.
Okay.
And so Indiana is about the same as Rutgers, which I don't quite understand. They're not very good on offense, and they're 6.86 on defense, which is a minus 1.06, but not much different than Rutgers. So I see this as a 28-29-point win for Michigan based on my calculations, which is about the same as Connolly had it. And it's about the same as I saw the Rutgers game. But I look at Indiana's record this year, and when you look at a micro view as opposed to a macro view, some of these games they've been kind of okay in. And I find this a little confusing.
So you're right.
All right.
Indiana has they did fairly well against Ohio State. They did fairly. They were in it on Penn State.
Michigan State?
They were in it again. Well, Michigan State's not that good.
Well.
And when you look at those games, what the difference between those games and the games where they were like, playing Rutgers head-to-head, like they were about the same level of team, is a lot of turnovers.
Okay.
So Indiana's had a lot of turnover luck this year. And I definitely saw it in the Ohio State game that I watched and I broke down for them where pretty much every single time they actually did get some pressure, which is very few. There was, I think, Ohio State over 100 plays, and Indiana got pressure on maybe 3 of them. 2 of them turned into interceptions.
Oh, okay.
So that is incredible luck going into and they had a couple that recovered a fumble, too. So I haven't looked at the luck stats, and I probably should pull those up, but that's the sense that I got watching those particular games. And I don't know. If their luck stats are off, it's because it's happening in games that don't matter as much. Indiana is not a good team. And I hate doing that because, you know, we always play Indiana tight no matter how good of a team they are.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we're going to talk later today about another close Indiana game that shouldn't have been. But I remember, as long as I've been a fan paying close attention to Indiana, I think most of these games have been close, even when they should not have been.
Yeah, I mean, they've given us a hard time. And you're right. So I went back and I looked just at the yardage numbers in some of these games. I mean, they gave up 542 yards to Maryland. They yeah. won the game, but they gave up 542 yards. They gained about 370. Minnesota, they got killed by. They gave up almost 500 yards to Minnesota. On the other hand, you know, they put up 550 yards against Penn State. And you know, it's a very odd
So my
team.
Theory on their defense, Tom Allen came in and turned that defense around. They were a terrible, terrible defense before Tom Allen got there. And you remember the 2014 game. You remember the 2015 game.
Let me see. Here's where my memory okay. fails. Tell me.
All right. So, well, 2014 was Michigan was just running all over them. 2015 was Rudock throwing to Chesson. It was the Rudockening.
Okay.
It was that moment when Rudock just turned into a killer.
Yeah.
And Chesson had, like, one of the best games by a Michigan receiver ever. And that was the defense that Tom Allen inherited. Tom Allen turned that into a top 25 defense for the first 2 years that he was there. He was defensive coordinator his first year, and then he got the head coaching job when Kevin Wilson got fired. And those were not the guys that he recruited, but he had like a star player on every single level. He had Hoff on the defensive line. He had Tigre Scales on the linebacker level. And then he had Rashard Fant at cornerback.
Right.
So he played a cover one-man defense. They were aggressive. They attacked a lot. They used their – I used this in my article a bunch, but they have America as their favorite, which is just a – it's a Sam Blitz, right? It's just let's bring the fifth guy.
Okay.
And they use that a lot, and they bring him in from the slot, and a lot of times he's not picked up, and that was their favorite blitz. They used to use it all the time. But they also had great blitzes from the linebackers, and the linebackers used to get lots of tackles for loss. They can't do that this year. They're playing a lot of cover two. They don't have Fant to just completely erase somebody on the other side. And the other defensive backs have kind of regressed, and I think it's because they're having to play so much cover two.
And they don't get pressure. I think they've had...
getting no pressure.
17 sacks all year, and that's against when they've got... they've got some meatballs at the top of their schedule.
So the guy who can get into the backfield is the weak side defensive end, Alan Stallings. He's 6'2", 247, so he's basically a linebacker. And then there are some backup defensive ends who are young and can get and can possibly get through as well. But it's still a very, very it's not an event that happens very often. They're getting nothing from the three interior guys. They play a lot of under. They're kind of a... I would still call them an over team like Michigan. Their alignment is a lot like Michigan's alignment, but they're going to shift to an under like Penn State's defense a lot of times too. And because of that, their strong side defensive end that they play normally is a guy named Gavin Everett. He's 300 pounds, and he's just another defensive tackle. He does not get any pass rush whatsoever. They get no pass rush from their tackles, and that leads to – and they can't blitz that much. So that leads to a quarterback sitting in the pocket – and picking away at them, and they have linebackers who are not very good, and particularly the middle linebacker. And then they have a strong safety problem. They finally replaced the strong safety with a guy who played with Brandon Peters, I believe. So
that's why their macro numbers are terrible. And it's why their yards per pass attempt are terrible, essentially.
Yeah. And that's the weird thing. I thought by now Tom Allen's got his guys. He was a great defensive coordinator. He's in his third year. And third year is like Michigan 2017, where you have your Winoviches taking over, you know, your David Long and your Levert Hill taking over for the stars that you had who graduated. And they just don't have those guys peeking through. So the only young players who are coming through are the safety I mentioned, Brian Fitzgerald. And he's not any better than the, you know, horrible guy they had starting there before. I shouldn't say horrible guy. The, you know, trouble spot guy who was starting there before. And the other guy peeking through is a true sophomore cornerback, Raheem Lane, who we saw play a bunch last year. But he's kind of switching off, and PFF hates him. They gave him a 57.5, which that's, you know, they're on a grading scale.
Yeah, I mean...
So that's an E.
Yeah, I mean, I think 64 or 5 is sort of C.
Right, Right. 70. When you get into the 70s, like a 78 is like the best player on a good team. Mm-hmm. Or, the best player on a bad team is a 78. And that guy on this defense is their free safety, Jonathan Crawford, who's been starting so long. He was part of that chastening mm-hmm. in 2015. And I think he's regressed too, but he's a 75.8. That's the best player they got on PFF. So the best player is a C-plus kind of guy. And everyone else kind of goes down from there. They don't have a lot of returning starters because they graduated darn near everybody. Marcelino Ball is really their one guy on defense that anyone has to pay attention to. He would fit on Michigan as a hybrid space player, but he's kind of out of his depth in a cover two. He just he's an athletic guy who's great at blitzing. And to have that guy sitting back there and tracking in coverage is – frankly, a waste and also necessary given the rest of the team.
So you're saying we won't need to run the quarterback this week?
We are not going to need to run the quarterback. I hope we are not
going to. We won't be running the quarterback.
Other than weird Indiana things, their offense is actually better this year than, well, at least better than defense. I wouldn't say they're good. Peyton Ramsey, you remember him from last year?
He's been around.
Yeah.
He can run it a little bit.
He can
throw it a little bit.
He can. He kind of became their running game. Their running back, they barely used him against Ohio State, and I think they barely used him against Penn State, too. He's a Rutgers decommit, which portends good things normally. Like, you should always go after Rutgers decommits at running back. And he seems to be tracking that way. He's a big guy who goes north-south, and I think that's why he hasn't done much against better defenses, because, you know, Michigan's just going to shut a guy like that down, right?
Right. I mean, you're going to, I mean, actually, Michigan mostly has been edged this year.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, except for one or two plays all year, they haven't been.
They haven't been edged that much either.
They haven't been edged that much either.
They get guys out of alignment sometimes. Yeah. I think that's where big running plays come out of.
I guess the first play against, or the second play of the game against Rutgers last week, they got edged, but I think they were misaligned.
Yeah. We're done with Rutgers.
Okay.
The things that happen against Rutgers are not. But yeah, Peyton Ramsey is he's mostly been dinking and dunking this year, and they mostly throw the ball to their slots. They have a lot of them. Wap Filyorn is going to be
out. Hurt, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's not going to play this week. Which, for name purposes, is bad. I would have liked to hear Grapentine's saying the word Wapfilior into the... that was a terrible agreement. Never attempt a Carl Grapentine impression, anybody. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so they're going to go with Luke Timian, probably, and he's a walk-on who I think played at Oklahoma State and somewhere else, too. He's a double transfer. And Michigan fans kind of remember him from that stupid play last year where their quarterback is in the process of getting sacked by Gary, who's getting in the process of getting terribly held and not getting called. And as he's going down, the quarterback flicks it just kind of anywhere, right? It could have gone to Devin Bush. It could have gone to anybody. It happens to go to this tiny white cornerback-looking receiver of his, and that is Luke Timian, who then dodges a couple guys and gets a first down on a 3rd-and-8. Yeah. And that was on their last drive.
So do you see Indiana have – I mean, I agree. They're not going to throw it downfield much.
Well, they've got a couple guys to throw it downfield, and I think they'll get a moonshot or two to mm-hmm. those guys. So Nick Westbrook is back, who is your stereotypical IU long guy, mm-hmm. right? 6'4 or whatever he is. He's 6'3".
But he's not Simi Cobbs.
Right. And then Donovan Hale is the guy on the other side who's got more yards this year, I think because Westbrook's been getting so many more target or getting so much more attention from defenses. Because I think Westbrook definitely looks like the better player, but Hale is still pretty good. Those are the wideouts. They have a young guy coming through with the fantastic name of Ty Freifogel.
I like it.
So Ty's dad played for Ole Miss. He's from Mississippi, which is. You never get a player out of Mississippi, but I looked it up on how did a Big Ten team get a guy from Mississippi, and his dad apparently played with the wide receivers coach in Indiana. And then their offensive line, they're all recruited by Greg Fry, and they all look like someone forgot to tell them that you're supposed to feed guys who are recruited by Greg Fry.
Yeah, because he likes long...
Yeah,
thin, offensive linemen.
He likes to take tight ends and turn them into offensive tackles who are agile enough to pass block. And that's what they are, but they're all kind of just around 300 pounds. And Coy Cronk is still starting there, even though he's a junior by now. He should be pretty good. He's a true junior. They've been playing him since he was a true freshman. And he's still just a turnstile. I think he actually, some NFL type said he was good, and I don't know what they were watching. But, yeah, Ohio State pretty much gave him the business with their defensive end named Chase. And if he's not good against defensive ends named Chase, I got some bad news for him this week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them being able to pass block well enough to throw the ball downfield very often.
And they don't. They're going to throw it.
They're going to dink and dunk the game.
Right.
And I don't know how successful that's really going to be, but that's what they're going to try and do. And I'm not sure they're going to run it all that well either.
Yeah. So I think it comes down to they're going to get the ball to their slots. They're going to spread it out.
Yeah.
They're going to go five wide a whole bunch of times. And it's going to be whether or not Metellus and, to a lesser degree, Hudson can track down those guys and Cannell, obviously. Contract on those guys in space. Probably some Hawkins in this game, too. So I think that's what this game will come down to. Special teams, do you have any notes on their special teams?
I got nothing on their special teams, so I'll leave it up to you.
They've got a their kicker's good. He's a he was a walk-on who's got a pretty cool name, Logan Justice. Mm-hmm. Spells Justice wrong, but still superhero enough. And then their punter is the same guy they've had last year, Hayden Whitehead. All right. And then their punt returner is one of those slot guys, Jason Harris. And he's, you know, a little slot guy. So, yeah.
More about Indiana than I know.
That's Indiana. This is why I scout. I let you people know what we're up against. And I was absolutely focused on Indiana when I was scouting these guys and not whatever opponent it was I was tracking them against. Who, I don't know, UNLV? They were Scarlet and Gray. I don't know what team that is. But we are not focused on any Scarlet and Gray teams this week, are we, Craig?
No, not yet.
We are not. We are focused on Indiana.
We got another, 30 hours or so. Or whatever
right.
It is.
And you know what else we are focused on? We are focused on basketball.
Because there's my thing.
Yep. So we're going to come back from our break, and we're going to talk a little bit about that Villanova game.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Hey, this is Seth from MGO Blog. Like many of you by now, when it was time to refinance my house, I talked to Matt Demarest at HomeSure Lending. Since we had bought only a few years earlier, it was amazing how different the experience was between Matt and our bank. He knows his stuff, gives you and your loan his personal attention, and can shop at the different lenders so you're always a priority. We are constantly getting similar feedback from readers who used HomeSure Lending when buying or refinancing a house in Michigan. He knows the mortgage industry well, which becomes a big deal when your loan is as complicated as mine was. If you haven't met him yet, he's tailgating this year with his HemGo bus at the Charity Beer Garden on 327 Hoover. And if you're buying or refinancing, reach out to HomeSure Lending, NMLS number 1161358.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Welcome back to MGO Radio something point 10, 4. I think it's our fourth season. This is Seth. I'm here with Craig Ross still. Brian is sick if you're just joining us. Why am I talking like we're on radio? Yeah. Who knows? We are going to talk about the Villanova game. And I got a pretty successful tweet out this week, and I know you're not on Twitter, are you?
No, I'm too old.
Do you know who's on Twitter?
No idea.
John Falk.
John Falk is not as old as me, but he's... in fact, I think I babysat for John Falk.
But go ahead. You couldn't have babysat for... yes, you could have. You could have been, you know. All right, whatever. Whatever. My tweet was a true story that I was watching the game on my computer while trying to break down Indiana film. And... You know, my wife was saying, can you give the kids a bath? And I'm like, you know, we're playing Villanova. Who's Villanova? Well, they're the team we played in the national championship last year. Oh, she knows that's serious. Mm-hmm. She knows that's real. So then she kind of wanders in maybe 20 minutes later, and she's kind of looking in, and she says, what's the score? And I kind of look at the score, and I look at her, and she looks a little closer, and she looks at me and goes, bath time. So I didn't get to see the entire game after it got out of hand. Most of the second half I missed because of bath time. Tell me, Craig, was there anything more than what I saw, which was a complete defensive walloping?
Yeah, no, it was a complete defensive walloping. Yesterday I was putting a small piece together for the Ann Arbor Observer on basketball.
Okay.
And that's the editor there, John Hilton, said, well, you know, was this an exciting game for fans? Are fans excited about this? And I said, I don't know, John. I got to go over to the drugstore. I'll ask people at the drugstore. So I wandered over to the drugstore because I had to get a prescription there. And there's two guys talking. And I said, hey, and they were talking football or something. You know, they were talking sports. So this is true. And I asked them, I said, were you guys excited about the Villanova game? And one guy went crazy, said it was the most exciting game of his lifetime because he was, and this was an older guy, because he was so surprised about the outcome. He just thought there was no chance. And the other guy said, wait a minute, you mean Michigan beat Villanova last night? He said, I didn't even want to watch the game because I just figured we'd lose.
Yeah.
And so he got all excited all of a sudden. So yeah, this was a big event. The stunning part of the game, you know, we came into the season with three guys who I believed were elite defenders. X, of course, John Teske, and Charles Matthews.
Yeah.
Those guys can all D up. And so I think, and last year we finished three on Ken Pom's advanced stats on defensive efficiency. And we lost Mo, who was not a great defender. And we lost Duncan, who for most of his career was known as Unkin because he played no defense. And he became a good defender.
Right, but that was kind of a Yaklich thing where he managed to move some pieces around and change how things were done in order to play to Duncan's strengths without making Duncan move.
Right. Duncan was okay as a post defender, but he couldn't defend on the perimeter.
Right. And once he went up against guys who could put the ball on the floor, he was done. Remember the Oregon game?
Yeah. So in any event, I thought, well, you put livers in as your primary forward. You now have four pretty good defenders. But I don't know that I ever, and I've been talking up Ignas Brazdeikis for 3 years.
You weren't expecting this.
I was not expecting that. And I was not expecting Ignas to completely demolish Pascal, who was our best player, was first team All Big East coming in this year. And he was, I don't know, 3 of 15 in the game, had a couple charges. I mean, he was completely demolished.
He was triggered. Like Iggy was getting under his skin, and I think everybody looked at that matchup before and said, you know, Brazdeikis is going to be a great player, mm-hmm. and Pascal is a guy who's been around the league. He knows how to use his body.
He's big. He's a
big guy, and you saw him in the tournament last year. I saw more of him in the tournament, I think, than when Michigan played him because they just didn't really need to run anything through him. Right. But he was using his body against young players. Very well, and I think he was expected to do that. Everyone expected him to do that. The only person who didn't think that was going to happen was Brazdeikis. and he got in there. He took a charge very early in the game.
Yep.
And when that one was called, I think that kind of changed the tenor. Like, the game was already looking pro-Michigan at that point, too, from the tip-off.
Right. I mean, right from the get-go, I mean, Michigan dominated the game.
And Michigan won a tip. I never seen Michigan win tip-offs. But now we've got a 6'9" Ent in there. Or what is it? 6'11". I'm sorry.
Who are you talking about?
Teske.
7'1".
7'1".
7'1", they list him at. I'm guessing that's close. 7'1".
So we had Teske in the start, and we win the tip-off, which never happened. Even right. with Mo was not winning tip-offs before. And Michigan goes and puts an easy bucket into Poole on the first game, and then goes down and plays hard defense. And then, like, right away, there's that charge call. And I think that set the tenor of the game, that Iggy was not going to be pushed around at all, that he was going to be all over that guy, and then everyone else was just shutting down. Like, you say we have some pretty good defenders. X or Z, however you want. I don't know what we're calling him.
I think
these days.
I mean, his name is Xavier with a Z, but I think kids on the team still call him X.
So X it is. Yeah. X is the perfect name for him anyway. Yeah. X is probably the best defensive point guard in the league, right? And
I'll tell you this. He may be the best defensive point guard I've ever seen in the Big Ten. And I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying that. He's as good as Gary Grant, maybe better. He's as good as Aaron
Kraft. I mean, there
Kraft,
haven't been
better.
Like some sort of Indiana clunker who was out there in the 70s. His job was just body people.
You got Aaron Kraft. You got Gary Grant. After that, I'm not sure. I'm sure there are guys who were very good. I think he's the best I've seen.
He is. So he has the athleticism to stay, but he's got the attitude to really just shut someone down, and I think that he takes it personally.
Yeah.
There was another play in that game where he had a couple shots at it before he actually just grabbed the ball and took it away, and another moment where Villanova was just absolutely triggered because everything is going against them, everything is going the wrong way for them, and they're just getting pushed around by a team in their own building with all of their own fans.
This is something which hasn't really happened there at all.
Yeah.
I mean, those tickets apparently were going for a fortune.
Yeah. Michigan fans were not going to that game either. So it was Villanova fans mm-hmm. either filling it or pricing people out so that there was no purpose of going. So there were not a lot of, it's not a big building anyway.
I don't think so. But the tickets were quite expensive and the building got quiet.
Yeah.
And pretty much stayed quiet. They made a little teeny tiny run, you know, maybe a 6-0 run in the second half when the building got a little noisy, but it got snuffed out right away.
Yeah. And that was probably during bath time.
Yeah. And so, yeah, this is a really, really smart team. Mm-hmm. It's a team that isn't selfish. It's a team that moves the ball. It's a team that can't shoot the ball. And how that's going to translate over the course of the years, I'm not sure. But I think, you know, right now we're sitting at number 2 behind Virginia, but Virginia's played meatballs and on defensive efficiency. So I think this will be the best defensive team in the country, and I don't think I'm exaggerating by saying that. But I think the problem for Michigan this year is going to be, you know, can we find a way to put the ball in the basket? And
so I think, and you know, this has been a conversation all year, I'm sure, for everybody, but I think Poole is going to be shooting a lot better than he is right now.
Well, and he's shooting 1 of 10 by my memory from 3 at the moment. I think he'll be better than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I actually think, and Sam Webb disagreed on me in this, but I think Livers and Eli Brooks may be the best shooters on the team. And Sam thinks that Eli's going to get pushed by David DeJulius, who could shoot in high school, no question about that, as the season goes along. But, you know,
yeah,
guess
that's
we'll
probably
see.
More of a January, February mm-hmm. development. And Brooks is definitely going to get his time in right now.
Yeah.
I don't think Brooks is the guy that the offense is going to run through. I think Charles Matthews showed that he can actually carry a little bit more of the load. It's not what we want him to do. We would like to see his, you know, usage under 18% or so, but he's been doing an okay job.
Well, I think Charles' shot mechanics are pretty good, and they're particularly good within 7 to 12, 14 feet.
Right.
And he can hit a turnaround. He can post up in there. I'd rather see him shooting that than threes. Now, last year, I think he made about 29, 30% of his threes.
He doesn't spot up. So he gets the ball and he doesn't immediately go up for the three. And I understand why. But, man, if he would just attempt some of those, I think he would do better than, you know, dribbling it around out there and then trying to get something.
I think he will attempt some threes, as the season goes along. But I like him as a – I know that everyone hates twos, except for layups. Everyone hates twos. But I think he actually can be effective in the between the basket and the free throw line.
So they got a couple of meatballs coming up, and then they've got the big North Carolina game.
Well, they've got George Washington – who is 0-3 and I think has lost to Siena and Stony Brook. They're shooting 54% from the free throw line.
You made fun of me for breaking down Indiana, yeah. And you know things about George Washington?
Yeah, I'm more of a basketball guy. And they're like one of the worst turnover teams in the country, which doesn't play well against us, and they can't rebound.
And he cut down a cherry tree.
Yeah. So it isn't – I mean, we play them, I think, noon tomorrow, and okay. I wouldn't – put a lot of money on George Washington in this game without getting some points at least. And I don't know who we play after that. We may play the winner of South Carolina or Providence. Is that right?
Yeah.
Alex is shaking his head. Yeah. And that's interesting because they're very different sort of teams. South Carolina plays defense.
Yeah.
They're a good defensive team. Providence shoots the ball. So we'll play one of those teams probably. Well, certainly we'll play one of those teams.
Yeah.
And then we may get South Carolina again in Ann Arbor.
I think we got Chattanooga first.
And then Chattanooga.
Well, no, we got Chattanooga and then North Carolina.
UNC, which Ken Pom has as a 50-50 game right now, and that seems about right to me. So.
Which, yeah, if they win that one, there is no roof.
Well, yeah, that's right, and that really is the revenge tour. I mean,
yeah.
Winovich's revenge tour sort of captured, you know, the Villanova game too, and UNC killed us last year at UNC, so it would be nice to come back and win that one.
All right, I think that's that pretty much covers the Villanova game. We have to get to our next segment, which I've been excited about all week. So we will come back soon with Johnny Wengler.
Is your online store sluggish, outdated, underperforming? You may be suffering from chronic crappy website disorder. 1 in 3 online stores built by your brother's friend's nephew currently suffers from chronic crappy website. But now, there's hope. Introducing Human Element. Huel has helped hundreds suffering from CCW to turn their online stores around, creating fast, secure, and engaging online experiences that turn visitors into customers and put products back at the top of their search engine game.
Before Huel, I had abandoned carts, browser errors, and poorly animated GIFs. Now, with Huel, I can focus on what I'm actually good at, running my business.
Jeffrey, would you be a deer and pull the Ferrari around?
Side effects may include increased traffic, customer conversions, better ROI, compliments, elation, and early retirement. Why live with the disappointment of chronic crappy website disorder? Speak to your Human Element consultant today to see if Huel is right for you.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
You got to listen to our music for a little bit. This is Seth Fisher with Craig Ross making noises over there. Are you all set?
I'm all set.
I'm sorry. So, we had a little trouble getting Wangs on. So, we might get him on a little bit later, but we are going to go to a little segment we like to call Gimmicky Top 5. Because Craig's never gotten to do this one with us before.
Nope. And I wasn't prepared for it when I walked in here. However,
that is part of how we do Gimmicky Top 5.
Right?
Yeah. It has to be off the cuff.
However, as soon as I began to think about it, I thought, okay, I got some of these because they've actually happened.
But. Okay. All right. So our, when we looked at the schedule and when it saw who the home games were this year, because Michigan State's on the bad part of the schedule. Anyway, it looked like a pretty bad home schedule, and I think that this year has been a lot more fun than we gave it credit for. So Michigan home games have been
they've been great.
Other than the SMU game, which
SMU game was the longest game in the history of football. I mean, I was holding my head in my hands for half of that game. It was interminable.
Yeah, I learned that at my advanced years that I really can't take heat as well as I can take cold. I can sit in a cold stadium forever and scream my head off, but that amount of heat, I had to run out and down two waters and a Diet Coke just to feel normal again.
I don't know if anyone listening ever saw the Alan Rene movie last year at Marion Bad. The worst movie ever made. It's interminable, and so was that game. So
other than the SMU game, we've had a lot of fun at this year. We've had a couple new traditions kind of popping out because they actually turn the music off and let people talk to each other a little bit in the games. And I think that's been great for, you know, getting the fan atmosphere back to kind of the Michigan Stadium that we remember from previous years. So I thought our Gimmicky Top 5 could be the favorite new traditions from going to Michigan games this year.
Well, These have arisen and actually have taken place over the last couple of years. I suspect, like a lot of places in Michigan Stadium, our section is a little esoteric. Mm-hmm. People are interesting, and so when I walk into the stadium these days, my first one is, it's section 39, and I start screaming, "We are old, but we are the loudest section in this stadium," and people start screaming. And I now see a couple other people who walk in saying, "We are old, but we're the..." And so it's a tradition that's started the last 2 years in that section.
So, yeah, that's your number five.
My number five
is, Brian disagrees strongly with me on this, mm-hmm. but it's true.
Yes.
And since when I was a little kid, like one of my first memories of going to a stadium was everyone would yell "Lou" at the Tigers games for Lou Whitaker coming up. Yeah. And I got like I was probably like 4 or 5 when I went to start doing this, and so I thought it was so cool because everybody yells "Boo," and for a second you think that, anyway, it was a thing that a kid would find cool. But I still always like that. I still kind of think of that as part of going to a stadium event. And we kind of lost McDoom, so I was like, oh, we're not going to have our fake boo cheer anymore. And now we've got True. And my favorite part is when you're watching games on TV that we're playing away and True gets the ball, you can hear the Michigan fans in the other stadium yelling True. Yeah. So I like True for that.
Okay, my next one is, this is something my brother started, who I sit next to. He last year, or maybe early this year, he started during breaks yelling pithy quotations from communist martyrs. Occasionally he will yell out something, "You can't have a revolution without revolutionary theory." And people just look at him like, "You are nuts, man." But that's what he's doing.
That is quite Michigan.
Yeah, it's very Michigan. I've got a couple more like that, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. So my number four is "Watch your replay, ref," which is what we've been screaming because now they start playing the replays in Michigan State. Whoever's in charge of the stadium cam now, or the replays up there, knows when there's been a bad call on the field and will stick it right up there. And the refs know it now too, so they'll kind of look up, especially the terrible O'Neill crew, because they know they're bad, and so they'll always look up right afterwards. As soon as they hear some fans looking, they want to watch the replay too. And we're close enough to the field at that point that they can hear us. So watch your replay, ref. Gets a response. and then one time it actually changed the call because they saw the face mask against Nebraska.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, that was stunning to me. But that wasn't the O'Neill crew. I don't know who it was.
It was the O'Neill crew.
It was the O'Neill crew.
Absolutely, okay. Was the O'Neill
crew.
Because
that's when we got, that's right, because I'm hoping we don't draw them the rest
of the year. We've been lucky since then. Yeah. I think Harbaugh might have complained so loudly after the Michigan State game in 2015 that we have not gotten them for another major important game. Yeah. Which, thank God.
Yeah.
Because of that moment, the entire section has picked it up. And now I go there and people don't know where it started from and just screaming it all the time. Watch your replay, ref. So that's my number four. Your number three
is
Craig Ross.
I started this this year, and that's doing poetry quotations during breaks. Now, this was in homage to
what is going on in your section.
There's some English majors, and this is in homage to Donald Hall, who was a friend of mine, and I took his great class as an undergrad. Was a poet laureate of the United States. And this, for example, I might say, "I cut my hands on the cords of the strangling post, but no blood spilled from my veins. Instead of blood, I watched and saw the pity flow out of me." Ken Smith, poet laureate of Great Britain, who I once went to an anti-war march with as he showed up in Hall's class. So, in any event, yes. And other people have done this now. We have poetry.
So now poetry readings are a Michigan State
poetry
a Michigan tradition.
A Michigan tradition.
That's a very Michigan tradition. My number three is the thing that I've been yelling. No one else has picked it up for me yet, but I still love yelling it so much. And it's, "You tried to edge Devin Bush. How did that work out for you?"
I like that.
And you can yell it during the play. Oh, my God, you tried to edge Devin Bush. You're trying to edge Devin Bush. How'd that work out for you? And again, close enough to the field that they can kind of hear us.
Yeah, you don't have to be close enough to the field. My brother sees every play as holding.
Yeah.
But I tell him, it doesn't matter. I mean, we're so far, we're like row 79 or whatever. There's no one hearing you, John.
The only player I think that hurt us was a defensive end for Western Michigan this year. Because he tried it. not defensive. Tight end.
Okay.
I don't know why tight end for Western Michigan was trying to get around Devin Bush, and like they were stringing it all out, and he was just trying to block him the whole time. And then it gets to the sideline, and Devin Bush makes the tackle. And how'd that work out to you? And he looked up at me and just gave me kind of a shake of the head. So that's the one time. But I love yelling that. It sucks that we don't get to watch Devin Bush after this year because he's so much fun, especially when they try to string him out.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. My next one is, what one are we on?
Two. You're number two.
Two is, and this sort of happened this year, is people started inventing imaginary Michigan mascots that they would not throw garbage at. Because one time during our section, a guy came in, or maybe it was a woman, I don't know, in like a Wolverine costume. And people started throwing stuff at it.
Right. Because we don't have a mascot in Michigan.
Right, because it's like at Penn State, for example, they can do a whiteout. Everyone will show up in white. They can do a white section and a blue section.
Yeah.
They'll do that. You think they could do a blue and a gold section at Michigan? Would never happen. People, I mean, Michigan fans would say, the hell with you. I'm going to wear whatever I want.
Yes. Michigan, the only thing Michigan could ever pull off is sweatshirt day. Everyone just wear your sweatshirt.
Sweatshirt, right.
Right. Because that's what, Michigan probably has more people going to a game in sweatpants than I think any other major program.
And getting our fans to cooperate isn't going to happen. It's like herding cats. And so people in
but that's part of the thing. Michigan fans are too cool. Yeah, they've done maze outs before, and it works for maybe like a night game. But it's cool when you see it.
Yeah.
But that's never been Michigan's thing.
Yeah, and so our section, there's always a conversation about, okay, could there be some theoretical mascot we would not throw, say, a rotten banana at? So far, they haven't come up with one, but there's been a lot of ideas.
Well, the Murder Wolf is out there.
You know, I love Murder Wolf. I hadn't, you know, that's right. Murder Wolf is so weird.
But I mean, as long as he stays in the fans, I think that's all we need.
Right.
Okay. Like if anyone tries to like take this over or tries to like make
people would throw stuff at him.
Exactly. Exactly.
The same as...
Right. But right now it's like a ghost. But like sometimes people will tell me like, oh my God, I saw Murder Wolf, and like they take pictures and put it on Twitter. Like, oh my God, I saw Murder Wolf. So
you know, and that's very Michigan to have a sort of imaginary, hypothetical, crazed mascot.
Right.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay. So my number two. I love this, is getting the Go Blue cheer going in other people's stadiums. Oh, we were so loud at Northwestern this year. And I know Northwestern takeovers are no new thing for Michigan.
Yeah.
But you can hear it on TV. It is so demoralizing to us when Ohio State gets their OHIO cheer going in the stadium. Which has happened more than a few times lately. And I think being able to do it to somebody else just feels so good. And you've heard it so much this year. And then I got to be part of it because I went to the Northwestern game. And that was just, you know, it's not hard to start. It's in the stadium, they raise the cards, and I think it's so loud. It's louder in someone else's stadium when the Michigan fans are just doing it on their own. And, like, you don't need the cards. My 4-year-old and 1-year-old can do it with each other across the kitchen table. They do. They go, blue. So it's great to have that cheer going in other people's stadiums and really demonstrates how creative a fan base Michigan has.
And my number one is a completely Michigan thing. It's yelling random fire sign theater lines out during breaks. So that could be something like more sugar. Or Speak English, Alvarado, which is completely irrelevant to anything.
Is this still your section? I haven't heard any of these.
Pardon me?
This is just stuff coming out of your section, right? Out of the poetry section?
Yeah. So speak English, Alvarado, more sugar. Those are things that get yelled all the time. Master Flash, this is ground beef control. That would get yelled in our session. And it is this year. So that's number one. And I like it because it's so absurd, so random, so Michigan.
Yeah. All right. And so my number one thing that's been going on in the stadium this year, and God, please let it continue, is playing the other team's signature stadium music in our stadium after the blowouts.
To Wisconsin.
We did it to Wisconsin. We did it to Penn State. Yep. So, and there's some more teams we've got coming up who have signature. I mean, Indiana doesn't. I don't even know even if they have one. But next year, there will be a few teams that were on the revenge tour who do have some signature things that they play in their stadium too. And, oh, am I looking forward to that coming out, because it's so much fun. We had this Wisconsin guy for the Wisconsin game. Most of the Wisconsin fans around us were great, and I think that's always been true. They're incredibly drunk and incredibly fun. And most of the people in our section were great, but there was one guy who just loved putting up his W sign the whole time, and he was, you know, jumping around the whole time and, you know, whatever a fan can do to make sure that everyone knows that he's there. Spent more time watching us than watching the game. He was there to make sure Michigan fans knew a Wisconsin fan was there. And seeing him walking out while we were jumping around was just so wonderful. And I even gave him, I started with the W. It was a very visual podcast, right? Hi, well, you know, it is a visual podcast. And I turned down, upside down, and gave him the M as he walked by. And that was a great moment. And then there were no Penn State fans around us during the Penn State game. So.
There weren't a lot of Penn State fans there, I don't think. Were there? I didn't see them a lot.
I didn't. Penn State travels well, but
it's a long way.
I mean, Michigan fans got to Penn State too. I don't know. Maybe they had an inkling of what was going to happen, but Penn State fans usually don't seem to be really good at that. At knowing when they're beaten before they come, but we didn't have any Penn State fans for me to gauge their reaction, but we did the dances anyway.
Yeah, it's been a good year.
It is. I love the Revenge Tour. I love everything about the Revenge Tour. I love that it's gotten basketball sucked up into it too. Yeah. So that's
no John Wangler
here. Yeah, you know what? We're trying to get Wangler on the phone, but. Yeah, he's a pretty busy guy. He's got senior day coming up tomorrow with his second child. So, we'll try to get him on another time. Unfortunately, it didn't work out this time. But, I loved having you on the
thanks.
Podcast.
Thanks for inviting me, and you'll get the A-team back next week, I hope.
Well, we'll see. You are a lot nicer to me than Brian is.
Well, that's good.
Is Indiana a revenge tour game? We did have a hard time with them last year.
No, they're not a revenge tour.
Okay.
Doesn't mean we don't want to win.
We want to win.
Yeah.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!